Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the show. Dan here with Michael and Johnny Cooper. We're going stats mad this week, aren't we, Johnny? You've got some right facts to bring to the table. Before we get into all that, just a quick mention that today's show is brought to you by West Yorkshire Electrical, wyelectrical.co.uk for details. Talk to me, Michael, about their excellent range of services.
About what? Battery storage?
Yeah.
They do that. Solar panels, do that. Roofing, do that. Alarms, CCTV, electrical stuff.
Yeah, and if you've been listening recently, you'll know the roofers are separate. You can do roof work separate to the solar panels, but they'll sort your roof out when they put the solar panels up there. It's got wires in it. They'll work with it. You know what electricians do, don't you? By and large. I mean, you are probably as good as a pro one.
Yeah, no, I dabble.
Yeah, but we do recommend you use the accredited guys.
I recommend you don't dabble actually in electrics. Really awful idea. Yeah. Get
you, use somebody who's fully accredited like West Yorkshire Electrical for your electrics. That's what we're saying, isn't it? Mm. WYElectrical.co.uk for details. Right, then into it then, Johnny. And what is turning into a record-breaking season, that's probably the main talking point, isn't it? There's records falling left, right and centre. So what have you got for us today?
Yeah, well, obviously as a stato, looking at the stats every day, working at Opta, even I'm struggling to keep up with the stats that we're breaking, and that's going on constantly, which is probably a bad thing to admit right at the start of the show. So hopefully I've not missed too many records. But just to start off with the championship in general, before we get on to Leeds being brilliant. So obviously there's three teams on...
Our last eight games in the championship, of course.
Of course, yeah,
Maybe.
Sorry, go on. Yeah.
So three of the last four fully completed championship seasons, only two of the teams had finished with 24 or more league wins. So already this season, three teams have 25 wins. So if you look at, like, even when we got promoted under Bielsa, Brentford had 24 wins and didn't get promoted, but West Brom had 22 wins and finished second. So we've already got 25 and may not go up.
Are we saying it's not fair?
It wouldn't feel fair if we didn't go up.
Yeah.
Whereas if Leicester don't go up.
Ipswich are probably going to feel that if they don't go up. Leicester are already on the verge of breakdown, which is funny because they might well rally and go on and win this and go up or whatever, but the arses are twitching.
Given the rule breaking, they don't deserve to go up morally, do they?
No.
I think it's only right that us and Ipswich go up.
Right.
And then, I don't know, someone else in the playoffs. Cost funny.
Cost funny, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, the basic theme of most of these stats is that it is just not fair that Leeds are in the championship this season. So since 2004-05 and before this season, there were seven times a team had 80 points at this stage of a season. And this season, there's three.
Right.
So basically, yeah. Never more than once in a season before that as well. So this season has just been
completely skewed beyond all the records show, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the times I came on earlier in the season, I said, nobody comes out of the starting blocks in the championship and wins loads of games. And then Leicester just like blitzed it. Ipswich started blitzing it. So you can blame me.
In fairness, though, we've blitzed it.
Yep.
Since, when did we see? It was October when we spoke, didn't we? So we didn't have a huge data set at that point.
Yep.
And there'd been the early season wobble, which was quite fresh in the memory. But since then, if you go into, I like looking at the season on Wikipedia just because they colour code it into green for the wins, yellow for the draws, and red for the losses, and it's just a massive block of green with a little bit of decoration in there.
Yeah, I think if you look at every point apart from the start of August, I think start of September, October, November, etc., we are top of the table. It's just since obviously August was a bit of a mess.
Do we subscribe to the idea that you should win the division based on how many weeks you spend at the top? Do you remember that argument unfolded on Twitter?
That was an Arsenal fan, wasn't it?
Some maniac. It's a bad metric. The league table is a bad metric for deciding who wins it, because Man City basically went top of the table late on, didn't they, and then usurped Arsenal. But yeah, absolutely bonkers.
I think it is the second latest into a season we've gone top this season.
Right.
I think it was 1968 we went top in late March, finished fourth that season actually. So.
It feels like reining in a team isn't a very Leedsy thing to do. It feels like we've typically been up there and then faltered and stuttered and just about got over the line in recent memory. Whereas this feels, I don't know, it's unusual to have had this run of form and to almost to be the one breathing down the neck.
It's strange. I mean, it's the second time in Championship history that a team's recovered from 17 points and gone top, which was Reading in 2011-12 under Brian McDermott.
I saw you tweet this. Did you see that? Bloody hell.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And the good thing was that, well, not the good thing, but they went top after beating Leeds. I don't know if you remember that game where Zach Thompson got sent off and Warnock had him like on the touchline, just like arms on him, having a go at him like a naughty school kid.
I think he said, "What's wrong with your fucking head?"
Something like that.
I remember someone lip readed him. Mm.
Yeah. I was dropped as a baby.
where is Zach Thompson these days?
While you look for that, the other part of that tweet was the time span that it involved, which was, we've done it in half the time, haven't we? It took Reading to overturn that gap, which is nuts.
It's crazy. I think it was 65 for us, 133 Reading.
In days.
Yeah, in days. Yeah. Which, I mean, obviously don't have every league in history, but I would be very surprised if there's been any other team who's been 17 points behind and gone top in fewer than, what's that, like 2.5 months, which is, it's crazy. So just testament to our great form.
It's funny talking about it now, isn't it? Without knowing how it ends, because it's been a record-breaking season, and you're going to look back at it and go, "We were really, really good all that season."
Yeah.
But does it render it irrelevant if we don't go up? I suppose it does, doesn't it?
Maybe
a little bit. It'd be one of those that I think. I suppose it partly if we don't go up this year, you see how next year turns out, because the second year of Bielsa justifies the first year of Bielsa, doesn't it? But if we, finish 14th next year.
But we're miles clear of all of that, aren't we? Like, from a statistical point of view, regardless of what you think about the styles of football comparatively, like in terms of how effective it's been this season, it's nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've got the parachute payments, haven't we? That's the thing. And I think that's what shows in the division this year. Ipswich are obviously an outlier, but the teams that have come down have clearly got a huge advantage over everyone else.
Yeah. The rest of the division's kind of homogenising, isn't it, now?
Particularly as they're starting to rein teams in with the financial fair play.
That's what I mean, yeah.
It's, you're less likely to get someone like Wolves, who were in there, who essentially spent their way out of it.
I think it's what a lot of people say as well about the journey is more fun than the destination. People always say that, don't they?
Yeah, 100%.
But at the same time, people are saying, oh, let's just stay in the Championship. It's fun winning. But if we lose a few players the next season, we're losing to Barnsley. Yeah. Then that's not much fun, is it?
No, not at all. Yeah. You lose the players that you
go
like.
Go up.
Yeah.
Medically induced coma for a year. You wake up in the Championship again, still with your money, still with your good players.
Right.
I think that's the only way to do it.
Interesting theory.
It's an option.
Do Opta have any stats on that?
I'll just bash Michael on the head on the way out.
Expected comas.
Because I don't want to see us losing 7-0 again.
No. I mean, this start to the year, since the turn of the year, we've dropped 2 points and we are effectively round to April.
Yeah.
Has that ever been anything like that being done before?
So in Football League history, we are only seventh team to win 12 of our first 13 league games in a year.
Right.
First team in the second tier since Grimsby in 1929, and they finished second, which seems a bit unfair on them, although it was 2 points to win back. There's only Man City in 2021 won the first 13 games in a year, and obviously they have Guardiola.
I was looking at Man City when I was looking at the longest ever winning runs. I think it's when we beat Leicester, and then on some of their podcasts they were saying Leeds will win every game. Now it's like we won't, because
but,
that would be
what we have.
No, we haven't. Drew Huddersfield.
But we should have beaten them.
I know, but that's the thing. That's the thing with the Championship.
You just can't.
You can deserve to win a game, but a champo stuff gets you.
But for that to be the only one of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games, for that to be the only one where you've come up short.
It's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't great against Preston, and it took that last minute, very, very late penalty, wasn't it?
Yep.
To win that one. But just one draw in 13 games.
It is crazy. And again, as well, with the defensively, we've only let in 3 goals. Again, no team in Football League history has conceded fewer goals at this stage of a year. The last team to do it was Chelsea in 2007. They had Mourinho in charge. So yeah, doing pretty crazy numbers, really. And looking, Football League goes right back to the 1800s. So we're up there with all these other teams. It's nice to compare us.
Record.
The clean sheet chat has just made me look up the George Graham season. I remember there were the 3 consecutive nil nils just before Christmas.
I can remember that. Yeah, was that when we were singing "We'll Score Again"? Don't know where, don't know when.
No, that was at the end of the season when we'd just come off the back of 2 other nil nils.
Right.
There were several stretches where we were winning games 1-0, and then there were several back to back nil nils in that season. But I mean, you could see why that was defensively good, because we didn't try to attack. Whereas this, for the most part, we're dominating games and
we've scored 70 goals. Leicester have got 74, Ipswich have got 80, Southampton have got 73. So we're right up there.
Yeah, that George Graham season, we've scored 28 goals.
That's a record few for a team to stay up. I think we finished 11th, didn't we, that year?
Yeah.
Which is bonkers, yeah. Fewest goals in a season combined as well. goals for and against that year.
Yeah, we really were spoiled, weren't we?
Yeah.
And yet it was, as it turned out, and that's the thing, it's kind of something you had to go through to get to the other side. We actually ended up building quite a solid foundation off the back of that.
Yeah, and Hasselbank arrived and Rush left, crucially.
We brought the goals in, but it's quite a hard sell, isn't it? Like, I suppose it was the opposite of Bielsa, in the sense that Bielsa was go out there and attack all the time and try and score, regardless of what happens, and hopefully by being on the front foot, you'll concede fewer. But George Graham was like, no,
It was fully eating your vegetables, wasn't it, that season?
Yeah.
Whereas Bielsa was straight in with a pudding.
Yeah.
When we signed, I remember looking when I was putting all the, you know, like tables together in Excel. I think when we signed Robert Molinar that year, I think we kept something like 10 clean sheets in his first 11 games. Wow. So you can tell me more about Molinar than I can remember, but he seemed like solid.
He was nicknamed the Terminator, wasn't he? Yeah. Just because he looked like he was just a big beefy bastard, was Bob Molinar. And he became a little bit of a cult hero, a folk hero because of that.
Yeah.
And he was just a no-nonsense, physically present defender. And what you were asking of your defenders back then was vastly different to what now. Mm. Like, you look at Ampadu, being a ball-playing midfielder in defence. You know, you're not going to ask Bob Molinar to do that. It was big-headed clearances, get your foot on the ball and clear it.
Yeah, and we defended very, very deep in that season as well. So his lack of pace was not particularly a problem for him.
Because he had another five mates around him.
Yeah, exactly. There were eight fullbacks on the pitch, so it was fine.
Yeah, but yeah, the defence has very much been the catalyst for this, hasn't it, since the turn of the year, with only those three goals conceded. But a lot of it's happening at home as well, the home form. Are we on for record-breaking territory there? I've seen you tweeting stuff about this recently.
Yeah, so longest unbeaten home run at the moment since we went 24 unbeaten between 1971 and 1972. The club record is 42 unbeaten, which was 1967-68. The first game in that run was our record attendance against Sunderland in the FA Cup. So we got a record attendance, went 42 unbeaten, and we never got any more than that. So sort of like everyone turned up for the first game and didn't fancy the other 41, weren't we?
Yeah, it's interesting chatting to Moscow about that as well, that era, and his book is there loitering behind you, which you can see on the video. And he was saying, like, from his research, that the crowd didn't really warm to how good we were.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
We were so efficient at winning.
Yeah.
And people knew we'd shut games out that there was almost like a drop in interest as a result of that, which is wild, isn't it?
Interesting that an FA Cup game was the record attendance as well.
Yeah.
Because you feel like now that would be people would skip if you're having to pick.
Yeah.
I think Leeds Sunderland games back then were a bit feisty. I think there were quite a lot of grudge matches going on in the midfield. And
yeah, but to be fair, there's always been that little bit of spice to it. I mean, they're not a derby in the sense of, like, you know, Newcastle Sunderland's a derby or whatever, but we are one of the games that's closest to them geographically
because of 1973 and all that.
73
has
fueled it as well. It's always had that little bit of something, hasn't it? And I remember, like, was it the Wilkinson promotion season when we got like 500 tickets or something like that at Roker Park, and I think we won there, didn't we? Was it 1-0? But yeah, there's always been that little bit of something there with Sunderland, hasn't there? Do you know what I'd really like, just with regards to, like, the record attendance, I'd like us to break that with the ground redevelopment. I know they're aiming at sort of 60,000, and Ellen Road's going to change beyond recognition. Just for reasons, I want us to break it so we can say we've gone bigger than we ever went before.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've found it, the regression in capacity at Ellen Road, a bit depressing over the years, actually. Yeah. It used to be, growing up, it was 40,000, and now it's like 36, isn't it, more or less?
Is about
where it lands because of away segregation and that little bit in under the scoreboard that they never use, and the sticker extra TV box in there and stuff, haven't they? So it needs to at least be above 40.
Yeah.
Just for my own,
because I remember back
just for
then,
my own childhood
back then,
image.
After they'd done the East, and we'd get the games when the capacity was 40,000, but we'd get like 40,204 was the one that stuck in my head because it was palindromic. Same forwards as it was backwards, 402,04. It's like, that's exciting. It's gone over 40,000. Starts with a 4. It's like, I suppose it's the opposite of when you do discounting in shops and you buy something for £39.99 rather than £40 or whatever. But anyway, we've been distracted by that.
But outside of the Revy era, it's our longest since 1955, which was 32 games under Rich Carter, who was also a Sunderland legend, just to mention Sunderland again. That's a bit like when we mentioned, like, Gary Kelly has the most games outside of the Revy era. So we don't want to sort of do down Revy's achievements, obviously, but we've only gone unbeaten at home in a season once, which was 63-64 when we won the league. That's in all competitions. The last time in the league was 91-92, which
I remember,
obviously won the league. So and the other times were 68-69 and 71-72. So we won the league, obviously, 69, won the FA Cup 72. So we should go unbeaten at home and win the league this year.
Am I right in thinking, and I don't know because I'm the only one who's probably old enough to have seen it, but you might know from a stats point of view, Johnny, the promotion season 89-90, we lost at home to Barnsley, like, in the penultimate home game, and it was awful. And if anybody's seen the video, there's kind of an awful doom yeah. feeling around and they're playing doom style music. Was that the only home game we lost in that promotion season? I think
I'll have to check.
I'd need to go back and check. My memory's failed me, but we were close to it that season
Did we go 1-0 up in that game and then lose?
Yeah. Chris Fairclough scored ahead of having gone off for stitches.
Oh, right.
Which you don't, again, another thing you don't see anymore. Players just go off for stitches, get their head stitched up, come back out again.
That Cavalier approach to head injuries.
Yeah. Different times. Yeah. And then he came on and he scored a header, didn't he, Chris Fairclough? But then we lost, Owen, was it Owen?
Is it Archdeacon?
Yeah.
Funny how those names just stick in your head.
Brendan O'Connell and Owen Archdeacon.
There you go.
Bastards.
one of my friend's dads, he still hates Peter Shirtliff. Yeah. All these years on for the 87 music playoff.
I said it before, that was on my birthday. It was my ninth birthday that game. Yeah, he ruined my ninth birthday to Peter Shirtliff. Bastard.
Sorry, Michael.
It's good to say yesterday we were on the a bit of the member show, which is yet to go out. Graham Barber gets a mentioned referee of the of the sort of 2000s.
Do you know what he did? What his crime was, Graham Barber?
Graham Barber. No.
Think O'Leary's team, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cardiff, was it?
No.
No, he disallowed a Wes Brown own goal.
Oh, that was God, yeah, I remember that. And missed a penalty, didn't we, that game as well?
We did. And he should have sent Barters off. Anyway, we'll get into it again.
All we're saying is we keep receipts. Anyway, so we were talking about the home form, weren't we? Yeah.
Just looking at some of the underlying numbers as well, at home in the Championship, got the most points, faced the fewest shots on target first, lowest XG against, love XG, and the fewest goals conceded as well.
Are you saying we should consult the home and away tables to see what we're doing? Because it's a big favourite of mine.
Do it.
He's only just discovered it.
49 points from 19 games. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Would Jesse Marsh say the underlying metrics are good at home?
Underlying metrics are very good, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
But I suppose the visible metrics are...
even better.
The really obvious metrics are good as well, which is key.
Played 19 at home, won 15, drawn 4, lost none, and we still shouldn't have drawn 4.
No.
We should have beaten Cardiff on the opening day. We should have beaten West Brom.
Who
we should have beaten Sheffield Wednesday. Coventry was, I think, a draw was probably about fair, but we should have won 19 out of 19, let's say it.
Yeah, easily. 20 out of 19, probably.
Yeah. Tell you what, here's a quiz. I'll ask you both to give us a number. So we've won 15 of our last 16 home league games, and our previous 15 home wins were across how many matches?
Oh,
that's got to be. Let's have a look. So we were completely abysmal in the final relegation season, weren't we? I think we won 3 games at home all season.
It's going to be at least across 2 seasons, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should I think of the actual wins we had last year? You can't take long to rack them up.
What was the question? How many seasons or games? Or
just games, so 15 out of how many?
So we 19 at home, 19 at home. So that's 38 over 2 years. Are we going to, let's say, should we say 45?
I'm going to go slightly lower. I think maybe like
42.
I think maybe like 42 or something.
53.
Fucking wow.
Not great, is it? Although a few of them were behind closed doors, but even like going to the game, it was just quite just rubbish wanting to watch. It was just
because that has been one of the really pleasant things about going to Elland Road this year is going up and turning up thinking you're going to win.
Yeah, because basically since they opened the doors again, it's not been great, has it?
No.
That's why we deserve to go up. We've covered this.
Yeah.
We're owed one massively.
Yeah. We've been horribly entitled.
And Liverpool fans maybe think they are owed one too, but they're not.
Yeah.
They might get it though.
Just as a side note, it was brought to my attention on Wacko that the Ipswich forum had picked up on Moscow's post-Huddersfield match report, in which he's quite clearly just taking cheap swipes at Huddersfield just to, take cheap swipes at Huddersfield, you know, the point, just to talk down to them. But they've picked up on it, thinking that we genuinely were annoyed that they didn't let us win. Because Moscow's basically saying that this is no approach to football. This is terrible.
I do agree, though.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Scoring first.
Yep. It sounds obvious, but yeah, scoring first is a good thing.
Yeah.
So we're the only team in the Championship yet to lose when we've scored first. We've dropped the fewest points from winning positions across the entire Football League this season, which is 4. I think that was Rotherham away, Coventry at home. Again, Rotherham away probably should have won given how poor they've been this season. Unbeaten in our last 50 Championship games when we scored first.
Right.
The last game we lost was Derby in the playoffs, which again, we don't really want to remember too much. And then since 2018-19, the only other defeat when we scored first was Wigan on Good Friday.
Again.
Again, not one we can remember. 36 shots at goal, one goal scored, one penalty missed.
Are we due one of those this season?
I hope not. It doesn't feel like that, does it?
Sure. Don't say that.
Well, you've already talked about the Barnsley game.
Yeah. Which was more vexing? Do you think it was the Wigan game or the Derby game?
Oh, the Derby game.
The Derby game broke me completely. I can't watch the highlights of that game still.
No, 4 years on. I think I've seen the goals by accident. They might have been on Sky one day when I was flicking around, but I've never gone back and watched that. No need to.
Some people I work with did go back and watch it and said they watched the highlights and we should have scored 6-7 goals even after they scored the third goal or whatever. We had loads of chances, but I just can't remember them in my head. I just switched off. It was just depressing.
I'm sort of glad I was there.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those weird things.
It's a bookmark in our history.
It's like a war story.
Yeah.
You get to go, oh, God, you weren't there for it though. You'll never understand.
But winning the league the year after, that was part of it, wasn't it?
It was.
It was the collapse at the end of the previous season because the whole season came down to that one game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all worth it in the end.
I think so. Yeah, but having gone through that trauma to then come back and do what we did the season after, I think, yeah, it made it worthwhile.
I might never have seen Ben White if we'd have gone up.
Yeah,
man who hates football, apparently.
Yeah.
So we've won 29 of our last 30 away Championship games when we scored first. The last team to beat us was Daniel Farker's Norwich, April 2018. I think Calvin Phillips scored for us that game when he was playing attacking midfield in the old days under Heckey. But again, when going behind, we've only Ipswich have picked up more points from losing positions than we have. 6 league wins this season when conceding first, which is the most since 1999-2000, which is again 6.
I've been trying to talk myself into the idea that because Ipswich do win a lot of games late, their luck will run out on it.
Just doesn't seem to be happening, does it?
No, I mean, I suppose Cardiff, it did a bit because it flipped and they conceded late. But, you know, I think back to, again, you can never help relating it to Leeds things, but the first season under Bielsa when we got those late wins over Christmas and I was like, this means we're going up. But actually, maybe it meant we were pushing our luck a bit in some games and leaving it too late. And it was a sign of some weakness. And that's what's happening to Ipswich in my head. And it's going to be fine.
I know what you mean. It's the...
We're winning games comfortably, I suppose, is the thing.
Yeah, because what I think is where, if it's not, even if it's not as romantic as it was under Bielsa, it feels like, and this is going to sound really wanky, like middle management speak, but I'm trying to distill it in my brain into what's the difference between that and this. And this feels like a very process-driven season, if that makes sense. We're going through the process of playing the football in the style that we do, and we know it's enough to beat teams. Whereas Bielsa was kind of all a little bit, there was process underpinning it, but it felt driven by like kind of emotion and thrill and stuff like that. And we get thrilling moments now with Leeds, but we sort of grind teams down, don't we, eventually with our quality. Yeah. And I suppose... Is that the key difference? I don't know.
I don't know either. I feel like the whole Bielsa thing was driven on a wave of like hope and emotion, wasn't it? Whereas this feels more like, well, I suppose the difference is now.
Is that why it feels more certain now? Though
we should go up is the thing because we've got a massive financial advantage this year, which we didn't have before.
Yeah,
it was probably more exciting under Bielsa, what you would say. But I've probably been more sure of victory going into a game this season.
I think that's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't need to compare the two. It's just I think it's interesting looking at the differences between them and how you feel about it emotionally. Like this feels like it's going to be. It's been a long steady run up where we've just kind of accumulated this fun over the course of the season, gradually, steadily, and then when it gets to the end, there'll be a big explosion and it'll be great fun.
Yeah.
If we go up, if we do it. Whereas my emotions were just sawtoothing all over the place with that Bielsa one. But again, it was the weight of 16 years of expectation there. I think
from going to the home games. The Bielsa atmospheres were better. Obviously, we missed out on the promotion being behind closed doors. And I feel like this season, the atmospheres haven't been as good. Mm-hmm. But then the Leicester game was one of the best atmospheres I've ever been a part of. And you think if we beat Southampton last game and get promoted, it's going to be like bonkers.
Yeah, it'll be off the charts, won't it?
Yeah, so let's just hold on to that. Let's hook her up before then, and we can just have a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really don't mind. I know people have said it'd be nice to do it on the day. Not bothered.
No, I'd rather it was done.
Yeah.
Like three games to play.
I don't want to go into that last game on my wit's end, if at all possible.
It'd be nice. I think it would be fairly nice if we can talk dream scenarios.
Are we there when it happens, but it's not that game?
We're already up, but we can win the title on the last day.
Right.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Because then you get something else that you can. And if you lose, you go, fuck it. Don't matter anyway, does it? Not really. It would have been nice, but never mind.
All over it.
But yeah, that'd be the sort of the cherry, wouldn't it? But I'm happy to just go up.
Yeah.
Second is fine.
So we spoke about defence, going to the midfield and move forward. And we've seen a breakthrough season for Archie Gray, the emergence of Gruev as the season's gone on, Kamara's form across the seasons. What have you got for us in terms of midfield?
Archie Gray, so he broke the Leeds record for the most starts before turning 18, which was held by Terry Connor since 1980. Some of the other players in the top five, Gary Sprake, John Charles, Simon Walton, who was obviously breaking through them. And he had the joint most appearances before turning 18 with Aaron Lennon with 40 games. So obviously he's a great talent, but it's not seen often in our history that a player comes through this young and starts as many games, plays as many games. Mm. Similarly, in the Championship, only Ryan Sessegnon and Gareth Bale have ever started more Championship games before turning 18 in a season than Archie Gray. And the other one who started 32 was Bellingham. So Gray's got a pretty good chance of playing for Real Madrid after he's won the Premier League, Champions League, World Cup.
I'll tell you, I'll allow him his move to Real Madrid after he's won us all that.
Who? Archie.
After he's won us everything.
No.
He'd
no.
be for life, like Eddie.
No. Finish club. He's staying. Staying forever. He even said in an interview this week he wants to play with Harry in the first team. So he's a bit young to be throwing him in. So we'll drip him in over the next 5 to 10 years. And Archie can hang around for his kid brother to come and play.
Sounds fine to me.
Yeah,
I think he should be. You know, he's worthy of at least one season at Real Madrid, and then he can come back. I mean, we got our shirts from Real Madrid, didn't we? The white shirts.
That's true.
Do you think Archie Gray is probably the story of this season overall?
I think there are lots. Depending on how you look at it, you can look at the kind of redemption story for Dan James. I think he's pretty big as well because I think he was more or less written off, wasn't he, at this point last season? I didn't expect him to ever come back.
No.
And then here he is, arguably our best player this year. So I think that's been amazing. Archie's been in there. I think the way Bamford is ending the season is another sort of redemption tale as well, because he was someone that early in the season you sort of go, it's not going to happen here, is it? We just need to make a plan around him because he's not going to be fit and he's not going to contribute. And all of a sudden he's in the team and we're just on this incredible run of games and he's a major part of it. So I don't know, because we're doing well, there are loads of different ways you can look at it if you want. But as someone who works at Opta, can you fix it so Archie Gray's goal against Leicester?
Goal, yeah, I know.
I want it on his record.
Well, I did a piece for the Opta Analyst, which is the sort of like sister thing that we have, which we can do writing for. And I'd actually written that he was like the youngest scorer since whoever. And then I'd written that, I think it was the same day, got it chalked off. And I was like, oh, I didn't see it coming, because it was quite a few days after that they took it off him. Mm. To be honest, it probably was an own goal, so I'm going to defend the company. But yeah, it was disappointing from our point of view that he didn't get it. But yeah, I think he would have been the youngest Gray, wasn't it, to score by, I think, one day before Eddie.
Yeah, he got to celebrate it anyway.
Doesn't matter, yeah.
He genuinely looked like he didn't care.
No, that celebration was so good. That got the crowd proper going.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he was loving it.
Just to go into a little tangent just momentarily, I think need to have this confirmed, but this could be the moment. We need to capture this moment on camera and on audio. So, Johnny, you were here to witness this. I think the shirts might have been reduced to 20 quid now, the Leeds shirts. So we're at the trigger point.
I'm going.
Are we going to stop the recording? And got
I genuinely am going to go to the shop after this and buy one, because I've been waiting for 20 quid.
Yeah, because we've been saying, like, I'm not the sort of person who necessarily wears replica kits, but I feel like I want this set because I know Ed Cowburn designed them, which you should go back and listen to or watch those shows and find out how and why the kits came around, because if this is a promotion season, we'll end up remembering them, won't we? And they'll be collector's items, I dare say.
Can I take them back in 6 weeks when we don't go up?
Yeah, yes. I do feel a bit bad for the blue kit, if you can feel bad for a piece of material, because I think it's a really novel and original Leeds United flavour design, and we've not won in it yet.
Mm.
Maybe we should wear that at home against Southampton when we lift the title, as you were proposing, Michael. So we need to verify that. It might not be the case, so just stand down if it's not.
I'm on the website now.
Is that
£20?
Right. Right,
it's a good day.
Are we off round to Elland Road straight after this?
Absolutely.
Well, you're driving off to Wales for your little week off now, aren't you? So,
yeah,
which when this goes out, you'll be in Wales wearing your new pink shirt.
Scouting.
Yep.
Getting our new Welshman. Do you have any Welsh stats? I realise I've sprung this on you. I don't expect you to have any.
Thank you very much for springing that on. I think when we had four Welshmen playing in the same game, it might have been the Leicester game. It was the first time we'd had four Welshmen since 1980 in the same game, which was against Man United. I think that was, top of my head, Alan Curtis, Gwyn Thomas, Brian Flynn, Byron Stevenson.
And Dan James as well. We're talking the morning, we recorded this on Friday, and we're talking the morning after Dan James scored that goal against Finland. Was it the fourth one? And did you, well, I think a lot of people who listen to the show or watch it will have heard your afterburner's noise.
The car noise that he makes when he runs quickly.
When he ran through. And Scott, we'll talk about Dan James in a second. We were talking about midfield, weren't we, anyway? Sorry.
So it is Gruyff. Is it Gruyff or Gruyff?
I think he's since
clarified
it is Gruyff.
It is Gruyff. Right,
I don't know where the Gruyff thing came from. I don't know if he's someone has been taking the piss of Britain and been like, oh, it's actually pronounced Gruyff, you know, just to see if he'd say it. But I think I'm pretty sure he has since clarified now it is Gruyff.
Okay. I don't like pronouncing names wrong, because last time I did, I came on, I pronounced quite a lot of the Dutch players' names wrong, and a guy I used to work with messaged me saying, you need to work on your pronunciations. They were terrible.
Was it a Dutchman?
Yeah. He called me up. So they started 13 games alongside one another. We've won 12 and drawn one. That's Gruyff and Kamara.
Right.
In 2024 in the Championship, the two midfielders with the best passing accuracy are Gruyff and Kamara again. Kamara at 94%. So 94 out of 100 passes, he's finding a teammate. And then Gruyff is 93, which is just, crazy. I know they sometimes get criticised for just being a bit safe on the ball.
I was going to say, I enjoy those moments where they just pass it between them for 5 minutes. But actually, as time's gone on, I've started to understand why they do that now. And it's to draw players out. And they pop it into midfield, they pop it back. But they'll stand close to one another. Yeah. So somebody nearby will get frustrated and start to come towards the ball, which then frees up space behind them. It's fascinating, actually, starting to understand tactics, because I'm effectively a football idiot.
I mean, I'm just enjoying watching those two, having had to witness Mark Rocker and Weston McKennie occasionally playing in centre midfield last year together. These two actually just looking competent is a real welcome relief.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, after watching last season, I think our pass accuracy overall was 75%. This year it's 86%. Yeah. I know people go on about pass accuracy, but it is nice.
The underlying metrics, though, you're looking.
I'm looking at the underlying.
That's
metrics,
the wrong
though.
Underlying metric. Look at the ones that say we were good.
So I think I described when we spoke to Angus Kinnear that I said it felt like that last season had spiralled out of control, and he might have said I don't necessarily agree with that, but it did, didn't it? Because we started off the season, so you know your foundations are put in place in pre-season, and we went into it with that god awful Red Bull plan, no width and just running around like idiots. So when it came to making a change post-Christmas, the players have been sort of drilled in this one chaotic system all year, and it was then really hard to get them to adapt to doing something else, particularly because the confidence was shot by that point.
I think they had a go, didn't they, under Gracia? I think the first half against Palace was really good, and then obviously second half, not so good, and it all went downhill.
The bad thing happened.
I don't know what happened at half-time, but something did. But it looked like he was actually getting us to pass the ball a little bit, and then obviously Allardyce came in. I think we had 59% pass accuracy against Man City in that away game. Nobody was expecting like 100% against Man City, but it was bleak.
Yeah.
It's just twatting it clear, isn't it, essentially?
And you think to go from that to what we've gone through this season is just night and day.
But we've spoken about us being like almost Man City light in this division at times, because we can seem a little bit predictable at times, and we keep possession for ages, and we do just pass it and pass it and pass it. But then, like Man City, we just keep winning games. So
it's
very effective.
And it is with a view to drawing people onto us. So they'll just knock it about a bit until somebody goes, well, I can't just stand here and let them knock it about all game. So I better go after it. And then suddenly you start to pull their defence higher and higher and create spaces in midfield. It's fascinating watching it.
The thing is as well, we don't need those two really to be creative, get loads of assists, because we've got Routier, Dan James, Somerville, Bamford chips in with them. So it's not like they're there to do that. They're just there to keep the ball.
Yeah, move the ball move around, the ball. Look after it, pass to one another.
It does feel like neither of them will ever score a goal.
Kamara, which was it, Huddersfield, where he was
just refused to tap it in. More
crazy. I actually looked after the game. He had had four shots this season. I couldn't believe it. I can't remember any shots he's had.
Mark me on this one then. So if we do lift the title against Southampton, that's the game where he'll score it. But like when Ben White finally scored in the previous promotion season.
Ilya Gruyff has 3 career goals, I've just looked.
Right. Feels like he might twat one free kick in at some distance.
Ampadu didn't have any career goals, did he? Then he got 2 in a game.
That's true.
So you never know.
And it's a record breaking season where we are
absolutely
defying convention, aren't we, this year in many, many ways.
Vossman corrects me. I think Ampadu did have like a playoff goal in Italy or something. He didn't have a standard league goal, I think, prior to that.
You're not allowing that.
And that wasn't league goals either, it was cup. So he's still useless. Come on, Nathan. For Christ's sake.
So in terms of them looking after the ball, passing it to the creative players, the attackers very much been scoring us
fantastic, yeah.
plenty of goals, and it's been fun to watch. Yep. Talk to us about those then.
So we've got obviously Jorginho Rutter, who I know, remember last time we came on, you said, or I've listened to you on the podcast saying you just love watching him, he just makes you happy.
Yeah.
And that's the same how I watch him. 16 assists this season, the most by a Leeds player in a season since Robert Snodgrass, 2008-09. There's only one player on Optraz on record last 11 seasons who has more assists in open play in a season. He's got 15 this year, that's Emiliano Buendia. 2021, that was under Farker at Norwich. Mm. He got 16, so should break the record this season. He's topping the championship this season for chances created in open play, overall assists, assists in open play, won the most fouls, he's played the most through balls, the most accurate pullbacks from the touchline, he's won the most duels, and he's second for big chances created and completing dribbles. So he's basically just doing everything.
Yeah,
winning the most duels is a little bit surprising for a flair player, but he's quite a big unit, isn't he? And he's all arms and legs, so he's got to get the ball off.
It's very difficult to easy to forget that he's only 21 because he's built, you know, like he's a lot older than that, and he just puts himself about and gets up, like say, won the most fouls. I think there's only four times a player has been fouled seven times in a game this season, the championship, and two of those were Rutter within the space of about three games over Christmas. So he's definitely the one who's putting himself
about. It's funny, you know, you're talking about that the number of times he's fouled is the most fouled player in the world ever. And again, going back to last season, and we're not picking on Aaronson just for any particular reason. Have you done the same as me and Brian?
Yeah.
So you're saying that Rutter's 21, Aaronson is now 23,
and still only 8 stone.
And his physique just not quite the same, and the amount that he would go to ground. Now Georgie goes down a lot, but it's interesting to note the sort of emotional response to it and how different that is among the fans, because Jorginho makes things happen.
And actually wins free kicks.
Yeah.
Right. With Brendan, it felt like he just ran out of ideas, so would fall over, whereas it feels like Rutter can actually draw a foul, and it's a completely different thing. Is that like he'll move the ball to places where, to try and win it, people are going to have to foul him, whereas Aaronson used to just run down a blind alley and fall over, which is, and I suppose as well, it's in the context of a side that was getting battered every week.
And it's
so as you see it, you go, fucking hell!
And it's all tactics. The thing is, and this is why I've said before, like, I still think there is a half decent footballer within Aaronson if he can beef up and learn not to just go down all the time.
23 though.
No.
When's he going to beef up?
I don't know. Get him on the staking. Well, maybe he is going to be. Maybe he just needs to be deployed differently. But I think there's an intelligent player in there somewhere. But I think the Red Bull system that he's been drilled in so much doesn't help him, because the whole premise of it is give the ball to whoever, him, and then run for the penalty spot. In the absence of any tactical instruction, and we know there's a load of tactical instruction within Farker's system, and look how it's brought the best out of Dan James this season, because I wondered if his game has been simplified and he just knows, beat the man, put a cross in, or beat the man and score.
You just never know if he'd had a season under Farker, we might have been talking about him doing things like Rutter. Obviously, end of last season, we wondered, why have we spent £30 million on this player? What is he doing? We didn't need him, and he's been one of our best players, if not best player. So you never know. Farker might have got something out of Aaronson, but
I mean, I suppose in a strange set of circumstances, he could end up like playing in a friendly for us at the start of next year, and then Farker sees it and he goes, okay, maybe I can use him. A bit like, I suppose, like in the way that Click was put out on loan and everyone assumed that was probably it for him, and then he gets in and plays some games, and then all of a sudden becomes a part of the team. So I guess it's not completely closed off for him.
Yeah, or if we went up and he was used in a similar way to how Jaden Anthony's been used for us this season, you know, a bit more sparingly, and just learns the system and gets used to the Premier League and all that sort of stuff. I just don't think he's played Champions League football, so he's not terrible. He was bad in a bad side.
Michael Dewberry played Champions League football.
Right, let's move on.
Tony Hackworth got a sub appearance in the Champions League.
Yeah, we were talking about the attackers, so the stuff that they've been producing, and a hugely productive season for Dan James.
Yeah, Dan James has got the best minutes per goal or assist for Leeds this season. So he's had quite a lot of sub appearances. One goal or assist every 114 minutes, 12 goals and 8 assists. He's had 10 goals and 6 assists in his last 16 games at Elland Road, and there's only been 3 games he hasn't either scored or assisted in that run. So he's been doing, even coming off the bench, he's obviously got that assist for Patrick Bamford against Leicester where he just smashed it at goal. but he does seem to be playing really well, especially at Elland Road. Quite a lot of his goals have been at Elland Road.
Yeah, he's adding end product to the raw pace.
Yeah.
Because he used to beat a man, you go, well, he's going to boot it into the stand, or he's going to not quite know what to do, or just put an aimless cross to somebody. But he seems to be a lot more focused this year.
I feel like in some ways his pressing is more focused as well, because he, under Bielsa, it was everyone press all the time, more or less. And I'm aware that's a very simplified version of it, and there'll be people saying, actually no, it was like, on the face of it, there was a lot more pressing throughout the whole game, wasn't there? Whereas it feels a bit like now James is more controlled with it, and I don't know if that means he has a bit more energy for key moments or something. I don't know if that is making a difference for him, because, or maybe it's just that we're in the Championship and he's up against the likes of that Huddersfield Fat Lad.
I agree, because if you look at where we allow opposition teams to have the ball, it's always sort of defence and fullback areas. Let them have it there, knock it about there, and then shut off the wide areas and force them backwards. So it just, you know, it's come and cut off the angles, that kind of thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, but I do enjoy it when Dan James does, like, appears from nowhere in a defensive mode. He, like, legs it back from 40 yards away to nip it off someone's toe. It is nice to watch. Yeah.
We are top this season for fast breaks, which is basically what Opta would call a counter-attack. So the most fast breaks, most shots from a fast break as well. So basically going from attack to defence. Mm-hmm. And Dan James has had the most shots from those fast breaks for us this season. So him on the counter-attack has been really good. He got two in one game against Huddersfield.
It's not surprising, I suppose, when you look at the players, is it? When you've got James, Somerville, Nonto. Rutter's not slow, is he, particularly? I know it's not kind of his main strength, but it's inevitable, I think, you know, when you've got such good players for it.
I mean, Michael was demanding 27 goals from Nonto for a redemption, full redemption arc. You've softened your stance now to 10?
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah, as long as they're important ones.
So are you weighting them by?
I don't want him stat padding, adding the third in a 3-0
like Harry Kane taking penalties against San Marino.
Yeah, he's got to be. I want winning goals. That's right, what I'm after.
Fine,
but he's done quite well recently. Mm. I'm kind of in the same boat as you, as I was a bit. He'd come on and I'd just be getting really annoyed at him. Mm. But since he started scoring, suddenly I've kind of softened on him. Funnily enough, but yeah, since the start of February, only three players in the Championship have more goals and assists than him. And away from home, he's top for goals and most goal involvements. So
do we need to play Willie Nonto away and Dan James at home?
That seems to be the method.
You should get onto him. Give him
sorted. I'll have a word.
Get onto Farker. Say, listen, I've been looking at the underlying metrics.
Definitely needs my advice, doesn't he? Top of the Championship.
I was saying, I want more Rutter home goals.
Yeah. Oh, well, Rutter, in fact, I was reading Nancy Frosten's article. I didn't realise that he was bottom for underperforming his XG this year. Mm. He's scored 5.4 goals less than he should have done, according to his XG. So that's the one thing he needs to work on.
Which does kind of fit with what we've seen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Finishing,
it matches up to the eye test.
His finishing is pretty reckless at times, isn't it?
He's had 106 shots, which is the sixth in the Championship. Yeah, it's the lowest conversion rate in a season since Luke Freeman in 2017-18. I just wanted to chuck a random Championship name out there. When I looked that up, I was like,
according to the XG, he should have 11.4 goals,
that's it,
Georgie, and he's got six. I know you'd struggle to score your 0.4.
Nah, but never mind. Ruffle his hair. He's a good lad.
Just on Rutter and Somerville linking up, they've created 58 chances for each other this season, which is the most in the Championship in a season on record, last 11 seasons. And that's 29 from one another, so to each other. No other duo's done 15 or more to each other. So the numbers are just crazy. When I look at, obviously looking at the data every day, no other duo's doing that in any division, really. It's just Rutter and Somerville are linking up really, really nicely.
There's a thing there, isn't there? Somerville's been absolutely crucial to this season, and it's funny to see how he's slightly gone off the boil as Nonto's gone into the ascendancy. I was kind of joking on one of the shows, because they're best mates, the two of them, that maybe only one of them can be good at any given time.
Well, I think he's seven games without a goal or assist now, which is his longest run since the end of last season, which is not surprising. But he did have a six-game run earlier in the season, so he should still, you know, come back round. But the underlying numbers are still good. Second for chances created in the Championship this season. He's averaging three or more chances created per 90 minutes. Again, only one of three players to do that across an entire season in the Championship last 11 seasons. So he's still, the underlying numbers are good. He'll start scoring and getting assists again.
The way that other players keep stepping up this year is quite nice, because like Grove did nothing, did he, for the first bit of the season. Then all of a sudden he came in the team and now he plays every minute and he's really good. And Bamford and Firpo and, you know, these people who you almost wrote off early in the season and were like, they're obviously bench players.
Even Pirro as well, who's kind of become a bit of a bench player. He's gone the other way. He contributed a fair amount early doors, even though we didn't quite get the system right, did we, in terms of who was number 10, who was number 9. But he still contributed 11 goals. And it's off an XG of 11.7, because I've still got the stats open. So he's proven very, very efficient, you know, to add another 11 goals onto our tally.
The bit we've not really tested is what happens if Joe Rodon is out. Because the only real evidence we've seen of it is Southampton, which weren't great. And he's played pretty much non-stop since then, hasn't he? In the league anyway, I think he had a rest at Peterborough, didn't he? I think he's had some cup rest. But I think he's been amazing for us as well.
Yeah. Will Strike come back in? Will he be?
I don't think so.
Will he be okay? But will he be back fit again?
Well, I was going to say, given the length of the injury, even if he was able to come back this season, given there's only 8 games left, you'd be careful, wouldn't you? And You've got the little Easter squeeze as well, where there's sort of two games in 3 or 4 days, whatever it is. So you'd have to manage him very, very carefully. So I think it's probably going to be just fleeting appearances, if at all, for the rest of this season. But no, you wouldn't change your winning side, would you?
No, not at all.
If at all possible. Right, speaking of Easter then, let's finish on a high then, Johnny, as we wrap up the show.
Yeah, so our Easter record is not very good. this is a good season to book the trend, though, as we've been saying. Yeah. So we've lost 13 of our last 17 games over Easter. Wow. We've lost 11 of our last 12 on Easter Monday. The only victory in that time was against Yeovil. Richard Naylor scored 2 goals.
Yeah, yeah. Was that?
Our last game on Good Friday was that Wigan game as well. So we want to try and just banish those memories.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then I think Easter Sunday last year was the 5-1 against Palace as well.
Right.
So, yeah.
Might stay in Wales.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Sorry about these games.
No, but I'll tell you what. It'll be interesting to revisit this. Let's do this again in the summer when the season's out of the way, and we can then frame what the whole season looked like statistically when we know what the outcome is.
Absolutely.
Because it all feels good, doesn't it? And I know that the Easter thing is worrying, but like you said, we've booked so many trends this year that you feel like we're a slightly different animal now. But there's only 8 more games in which we can revert to that horrifying, existential dread-inducing type.
Yeah.
Easter's sneaky anyway. It moves around the calendar. You can't trust it.
No.
That's what I'm saying. So
makes you think, doesn't it?
But this year, I think we can get on top of it. Yeah. Get on top of the bunny and end it. I don't know. End this bad run.
I wish I'd never brought up Easter now.
Right, Johnny, let's go into the bunny then. Cheers for coming in. We'll catch up in the summer,
Yeah, hopefully we'll do a promotion one and I'll bring some beers and we can all have a good time.
Yeah, where can people find you?
JRCooper26 on Twitter or good. X, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and a mine of brilliant facts every single week. So we'll look out for you on there and we'll catch up soon. See you in a bit.
Thanks so much.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.